Caster of Pods.
More of Lawn.
Monster of Solitude.
Chair of Wheels. More of Lawn.
Caster of Pods.
Chair of Wheels.
Monster of Solitude.
More of Lawn.
Wonderful.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client.
Mama Monster.
Conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
You fat, delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
EC3 opened his Feast or Fired briefcase on Impact this week, and he was fired. Poor guy. I'm sure he'll land on his feet somewhere. This is episode 540 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, now on Spotify for all the world to hear. For Sunday, March 25th, 2018, I am the Solid Monster. New Japan has its Strong Style Evolve show tonight from the sold-out Walter Pyramid in Long Beach, California. Show airs live at 8 p.m. Eastern on Access TV. For those of you that have Access, and live on New Japan World, everywhere except for the United States. For the U.S., it'll be uploaded on demand the next day. I do plan on watching the show, or as much of it as I can. I will try to watch it live, but I've not been getting home every night the last several weeks until 10, 11 o'clock at night with everything that's been going on, so it may be tough. Rey Mysterio was set to take on Jushin Thunder Liger. This was the match I was most intrigued by. It would have been their first match since their only match, I think, at Starrcade back in 1996. But because of Rey's it might partially be torn too, but his bicep is partially torn, and he has been pulled from the show. Replacing him is Will Ospreay, which is actually not a bad replacement at all. Plus, the Golden Lovers, Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi, take on the Young Bucks. There's a lot of tag matches on the show, I noticed, up and down the card. We have Okada and Ishii, for instance, taking on Zack Sabre Jr. and Minoru Suzuki. Cody and Marty Scurll against the Gorillas of Destiny. That's just to name a few. So definitely check the show out, though, if you are able to do so. I know not everybody has Access, but there's always a way. Where there's a will, there's a way, and I know you can get Access. I think people have mentioned Sling to me before, so there are ways for you to get the network if it's not part of your cable package. Mysterio is flying to Birmingham this week. Actually, you know what? I think it was this past week. I believe he was already in Alabama this past week. I thought for some reason I had Monday on the brain, but I think he already was in Alabama getting his arm checked out in advance of him signing a WWE deal, which looks imminent. It sounds like it could happen any day now unless they see something on those scans that they don't like, and that certainly has happened before when people have undergone medical evaluations and they send them to Pittsburgh for all kinds of tests. You know, we've heard of people being signed by the company and then having the offer rescinded. I get the sense with Rey Mysterio, a guy in his case, that won't happen. So it looks like he's on his way in. And this is despite the fact that he's being positioned as the top star of that new Arrow Lucha promotion. It's very surprising to me because they're positioning him not just as a co-owner, but as the lead star of the brand. And they're looking to get television. And especially when TV is involved, you know, WWE does not use people like that normally, so I don't know if they just don't take the Arrow Lucha situation seriously enough where it just, to them, is that big of a deal. Maybe it was a bit misrepresented as far as what Rey's role will be on the show. I don't know, but I found that to be surprising. But look, he got a big reaction at the Royal Rumble. He's still a big star. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, and so I could see why they would want to make an exception in his case. And even if it's just for a match here and a match there, bring Rey Mysterio back, and it's just another big name for them to have on their roster. You know, they got two rosters to worry about now, Raw and SmackDown. So having Rey, let's say, as a part-time star exclusive to, SmackDown, would not be the worst idea in the world. And there's a whole bunch of new people on the roster that he could wrestle with. Before we get into everything else, don't forget to use our Audible link to get yourself a free book. That's right, I said free. That was not a slip of the tongue. I don't know why you would not want something that's free. You can get it using our link, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. Get yourself one free audiobook as part of your 30-day trial. of the Audible service. You can sample it for 30 days. If you don't like it for whatever reason and you don't want to continue on and pay the monthly subscription, you can cancel at any point during those 30 days. And even if you do, that one free book that you get to keep it. So audibletrial.com/solomonster is the place to go. Also, thank you to everybody who made a PayPal donation. As always, the place to go is thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button waving at you there on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on the show, such as the case with the Belgian Brute, Nicholas Overmeer. Thank you for your support. John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Out of Control Cody Thomas, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Masgrave Micah Harshaw, Sean, Nasty Boy Nilsson, Luis Hercules Hernandez, the Brooklyn Bombers, Jamel and Isaiah Walker, Aim for the Head, Andrew Jorlog, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, The Dirty One, Gabriel Sanchez, The Show Off, Corey Van Dam, The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eicher, The Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T, Lee, Hired Gun, Hieronics, Final Boss, Brian Dudley, No Way Out, Nick Fugit, Flyboy, Jazvoni Rollins, Jonathan Gears of War Gonzalez, The Renton Road Warrior Taylor Schatt, Jordan Rip Your Guts Out Roberson, The King of Castleberry, Kennedy Copeland, and that's it. I thought there was one more. That's it. Those are everybody who made a donation this week. Thank you for your support. It means a lot to me. And anytime you want, thesolomonster.com, it's always there. Open 24 hours a day. Speaking of which, all the support, been getting a lot of support on the Facebook invite for our meetup in New Orleans coming up on Sunday, April 8th. That is the morning of WrestleMania 34. We're going to be doing a group meetup. It's not a live show. It's just a very casual meetup. Everybody can congregate at Pat O'Brien's on Bourbon Street. I know that's also the first stop for Mania Crawl before they move on to the next bar. So there's going to be a lot of people there. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody there, even if you just stop by for a few minutes. Make the effort to stop by Pat O'Brien's on Bourbon Street starting at 11 a.m. We'll be there probably until, if I had to venture a guess, probably 2:30-ish before everybody starts heading over to the Superdome. So if you have not already RSVP'd, you don't have to, but please do so. Go on the Facebook fan page. I'll link to it on Twitter as well. If you think you might be able to go, just check yes or interested. Right now, from everybody I've heard via Facebook and even those who don't have Facebook, we're looking at over 100 people who at various points will be stopping by as part of this meetup, which is pretty cool. So hope to see you all in New Orleans. The big news of the week, gigantic news. He has finally been cleared to return to the ring. Yes, Big Cass has been cleared. He is on his way back to WWE television. No, I'm kidding. Big Cass has been cleared. That is true. He is coming back from his leg injury, but that sort of got drowned out by news of Daniel Bryan, after a 3-year absence, has been cleared to return to the ring. It is a day that many people thought they would never see. I'm sure Bryan, after all the fighting that he has been had to go through to try to get himself cleared, he was probably having doubts, thinking this is probably the end of the road for me. But here we are now, and Daniel Bryan is officially back. It's kind of like when Shawn Michaels came out of retirement for his second act. Now, I'm not comparing Michaels to Bryan, although you could probably make that comparison, but I'm looking at it more like Shawn had a first act, and then he was gone for a few years, and he came back and he had a second act, and that's sort of a similar situation here. Only, I guess if you want to make the comparison, he's coming back, you know, without the whole Jesus thing. Although if Bryan grows his hair back in, he kind of looks like Jesus, so I do think it's a fair comparison. WWE announced that following more than 2 years of extensive evaluations, four-time world champion Daniel... But four times? He was a four-time world champion? Really? I guess so. Yeah, you know what? I guess they gave him the belt a couple of different times, and they took it away from him, so... Yeah, boy, it doesn't mean jack shit to be world champion these days, does it? I remember a time if you were a one-time world champion, that was a big deal. Now people hold the belt 4, 5, 6 times and it doesn't feel like anything. Anyway, four-time world champion Daniel Bryan has been medically cleared to return to in-ring competition by leading neurosurgeons, neurologists, and concussion experts, including Dr. Robert Cantu, Dr. Javier Cardenas, and Dr. Jeffrey Kutcher. Brian underwent a full review of his medical history and received comprehensive neurological and physical evaluations independent of WWE. He was cleared by each doctor, as well as WWE's medical director, and really the only one who matters, Dr. Joseph Maroon. So where to begin on this? I know a lot of people were hoping I'd bust out some kind of emergency show midweek, which I would have, but again, I haven't been around, so I just couldn't. So I've had time to watch Brian's speech on Tuesday and the angle they did and really think about this. And, you know, that speech and that crowd reaction on Tuesday, those are the kinds of moments that make it so much fun to be a wrestling fan. For all the shit and all the complaints about this, that, and the other, when you get a show like that, you get a segment, a moment like that, it just makes it all worth it. It was so gratifying for, I think, us to be able to watch this guy, because we know how badly he has wanted to come back, and he's still been training, and even, you know, in his years off, and going to every concussion expert and doctor. He's had his brain scanned so many times, I'd worry about radiation and all that at this point. Hopefully the guy doesn't get sick. But he has gone through test after test after test and has just been scratching and clawing, trying to get back, and has been denied every single time until now. And to see him come out, and it's almost like he just didn't even miss a beat. He comes out, the place goes nuts for him, and they will at the beginning. I mean, you would expect that at the very beginning, people are going to go crazy for him. The question is, are they still going to be going crazy a month from now? We'll find out, but to see the reaction, to see, you know, he was near tears. He somehow held it together. It was really cool. It was one of those great television moments in WWE. And I will say this also, just to give him some credit here, because I think it's worth noting, Meltzer has an incredible write-up on Daniel Bryan in this past week's Observer that you all should find a way to check out. And it's just recapping the entire process of him trying to get cleared since the retirement speech a few years ago on Raw, and everything that led to this point here where we are now. He was ready to accept his fate. Brian had reached the end of the rope, and he was ready to accept his fate. This is it. I just am never going to be cleared by this company. He probably was going to leave and go wrestle somewhere else, whether it be Japan, Mexico, Ring of Honor, whatever. Maybe a little bit of everything. And he made one last-ditch effort to convince Dr. Maroon that he was okay to come back. He told Maroon in January to handpick your own specialist. You pick the doctors that you want me to see, and I'll go see them. And if even one of those doctors has an issue clearing me, if he finds a problem, if he has any reservations about clearing me, I'll leave well enough alone. I will accept my fate. Three of the doctors he saw in the last 2 months, all of whom are cited in that announcement that WWE put out, they're all world-renowned, well-known physicians. They all gave him a clean bill of health. And so the plan then was for him to go meet with Dr. Maroon one-on-one. Ultimately, he's the one who makes the final decision on these things. And he would be the final obstacle. He's like the final boss, you know, the final hurdle that Brian would have to jump over in order to come back. Because all the other three cleared him. They said there's nothing wrong. And so he was supposed to meet Maroon originally on the 27th, which was this Tuesday coming up. Vince McMahon stepped in. He wanted WrestleMania plans for Shane to be all settled and sorted out. He didn't want to leave that for the very last minute. And so things got bumped up to this past Monday. Brian was overseas at the time in Abu Dhabi on a press tour. He got the call to come back and meet with Maroon, which he did. And when Maroon finally cleared him, as the story goes, Brian just had tears in his eyes. And I read that, and I just so hope that there was, and I guess patient-doctor confidentiality, who knows how this all works, but I so hope there was a camera in that room filming that for like a 24 special on the WWE Network. Because that would just be such, I think the whole thing from start to finish, I wish Brian had some kind of camera crew following him around. Maybe he could have documented the whole thing over the last couple of years, building to this moment. That would have made for a cool documentary. Now, one caveat to him being cleared, which he agreed to, is that after each and every match he has, at least for the time being, as soon as he gets to the locker room, He will be ushered into another room. He will have to immediately undergo the company's concussion impact testing and a neuropsychological evaluation until the company feels comfortable that this guy is okay and we don't have to do this anymore. Frankly, I think if Maroon would have asked him to rob a bank, he would have done it, if that's what it took to get cleared. That's how desperate this guy was. Now, the news comes just 3 weeks before WrestleMania, which just so happens to be back in New Orleans, which, of course, was the site of his great victory over Evolution when he won the WWE World title back in 2014. I had my doubts of late. We were cutting it awfully close to WrestleMania here, so yes, I had my doubts. But, hey, that is one call from the prediction show this year, Sound Off 529, that I am proud to say came true. Daniel Bryan was cleared. He is back. His return on TV Tuesday led SmackDown to its highest ratings in a year, 2.8 million viewers, actually I think almost 2.9. Only the Superstar Shakeup last year and the initial draft episode 2 years ago did better. And that's just with internet hype. They pushed out notifications through their app. They were going on about it on social media. Daniel Bryan's name was trending. People thought he was dead. They got scared, dead or fired or whatever, but that's just internet and social media hype, too. No TV. So now you know why they decided to do what they did. I know people were very upset. Oh, you should have saved it as a surprise. Yeah, that would have been cool. But, I mean, come on. You know, like, they want as many people as possible to watch their shows going into their biggest show of the year. So, hey, it made sense. It worked. And people, at least for this past week, I don't know that they're going to get 2.8 million again this week. But it certainly paid off. Now, Bryan has had some of the best doctors in the world evaluate him over the last several months. They've given him a clean bill of health. They say his brain looks even healthier than that of a normal person now. So I am just really happy for the guy. And for WWE, you know, if they play their cards right, they get back a top-tier main event player. Just like that, out of thin air, they've got an impact player back on the roster. This is not just some guy that you have around. This is not some mid-card guy. This is a true blue, you know, whether he's the guy or one of the guys, he is a top-tier player in this company that I don't know that they expected to have him back, and now they do. He's another bullet in the chamber. And that's a big deal for them, especially when you have a lot of people who are injured at the moment. To get him back is huge. Now, all that being said, we also need to realize here that all eyes are going to be on him for a long, long time. And the last we saw him in the ring, he was kind of injury-prone. Or at least it seemed that way. First it was the neck, then he couldn't get his strength back for a very long time in his arm, and people were worried about that. It took longer than expected for him to come back from that. Then he got concussed again, and he's already had what? I think he's admitted to, what, 20 or more concussions over the course of his career? So there is a very real possibility here that this guy could get hurt again. And if that happens, then he ends up right back on the sidelines. That could be it. He's one injury away, I think, from permanent retirement. Hopefully not permanent injury. But I think he's on a very short leash. And, you know, the reality is some people are just prone to concussions. Some people are just prone to certain types of injuries. And it may just be due to their own style, right? Here's a guy who happens to land on his head a lot, which sucks for him. And he's going to have to make adjustments, but that's just part of his style, whether he's coming off the top rope, whatever the case may be, he's always landing on his head and neck. I mean, for God's sake, the very same night he announced his return, he threw three corner drop kicks and landed on his head all three times. So does he need to slow it down? He probably does, but then he's not Daniel Bryan anymore. I mean, I'm just looking at this selfishly. I don't want him to change too much because what he was doing before was working just fine. And that's what got people behind him. I know people want him to be safe. They don't want to see his brain turn to mush. But he is who he is. So he can make adjustments and be smart, but I don't think he can really change his style all that much. And honestly, I don't think he's going to change his style all that much. I mean, yeah, he'll probably incorporate more submission-based stuff that he's learned in his time off. But I doubt he ends up being dramatically different from the way he's always been. So every time he does a drop kick off the top rope and takes a flat back bump, you know, look, I'm going to cringe. Every time he does a tope out of the ring, I'm going to cringe. But I know at the very beginning, that's probably how I'll watch most of his matches. If he can prove he can stay healthy, then none of it matters. Let him wrestle however he wants to. He's a smart guy. I mean, I trust that he'll figure out a way to make it work without killing himself. Now, is WWE going to hold back because of his injury history? Is that a possibility? Are they not going to push him in the top spot because they're worried that, you know, can he withstand the rigors? Is he in it for the long term or not? Honestly, I don't think the fans will allow it. I think if they pull what they did back in 2015 by pushing him down the card, they're just going to revolt all over again. You know, in a weird way, it's like he just sort of stepped out of a time capsule. Like time stood still. And now it's unfrozen again, and here we are, yet again, with crowds going apeshit for the guy like he never missed a day. Surely by now you would think after 3 years, had he never gone away, he would have cooled down at least somewhat. But if there's one silver lining to him missing this much time, not that I'm saying it was a good thing, although maybe it was. You know, he's had all this time to heal his body and whatever nagging injuries he may have had. And apparently his brain now, with everything he's been doing, all the hyperbaric chamber treatments and all this stuff, is apparently now in better shape than it was. So in some ways it was a good thing. But you look at the silver lining in all this, and the reality is, by missing so much time and now first coming back, he's suddenly become the hottest star in the company all over again. Or at least one of them. I mean, AJ is no slouch. He's pretty popular. So is Strowman. But I'm not even sure Strowman has a connection with the fans the same way that Daniel Bryan does. Now, this opens up a host of match possibilities against AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, who is as happy as anyone to see Bryan back. That's one of the reasons he signed with WWE in the first place, was to wrestle Daniel Bryan. But then he was suddenly forced to retire. And Nakamura even tweeted out, he said, "This is great news. No one needs to wish anymore. They can see it with their eyes." So we know that match is coming. We have, you know, matches with Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Kurt Angle. I saw some people mention Kurt Angle's name, although, honestly, that match is like 10 years too late. I can't even tell you, sitting here, I'm like overly excited by the prospects of a Kurt Angle-Daniel Bryan match. I think it could be good, but I kind of wish we would have been able to see that match about a decade ago. Or maybe take, you know, sort of Bryan from a few years ago and, you know, match him up with Kurt Angle from like 10 or 15 years ago. That, to me, would have been a hell of a match. You've got The Miz, who he has been feuding with for years now. And speaking, by the way, of the prediction show I did a few months ago, one of my other predictions was that The Miz would win this year's Money in the Bank match and would cash in on the WWE champion, not the Universal champion. He would win the title and go back to SmackDown Live. And this would be against the wishes of Daniel Bryan, who would eventually step up to the challenge, and he would challenge Miz for the championship, and he would beat him for it. And I said at the time that I would hold off on that match until WrestleMania next year. That would be WrestleMania 35. I liked the sound of that idea when I pitched it in January, and I like the sound of it even more now. I can't think of a more satisfying person for Bryan to beat to eventually win back the world title, if he does win back, you know, one of the two top titles, than The Miz. So I like that idea, and I still say that there's a pretty decent chance it could end up happening. But you look at other opponents too. Finn Balor is another one. Pete Dunne, my goodness, you know, Daniel Bryan against Pete Dunne, that'd be a hell of a match. Johnny Gargano, Cien Almas, there's so many different names. The list goes on. All of this, of course, though, is predicated on him re-signing with WWE, which he has not yet done. He is still in a position where, come September 1st, if he does not re-sign before then, and I'm sure he will, but if he doesn't, he's a free agent. He can leave and go do whatever he wants, wherever he wants. He did an interview with the I think it was Arabia English was the name of the website. He was talking about the greatest Royal Rumble coming to Saudi Arabia, which I'm going to talk about here in a couple of minutes. And which, by the way, Bryan would be my pick to win that greatest Royal Rumble match. But in the interview, he clarified that his contract is not expiring in late September. That had been the rumor. He said his contract expires September 1st, the same day as the All-In show that Cody and the Young Bucks are doing in Chicago. So he wouldn't be able to be there even if he wanted to be. It would be something, though, after 3 years of fighting with WWE to clear him. They finally do, and let's say he walks anyway. He's like, adios. Look, I don't expect that to happen, but here's what I would do if I were him. I'll tell you what I would do. If I were him, and I had any reservations whatsoever that something like this could happen again and they can take my dream away from me and tell me that I can't wrestle anymore? You know, one more concussion and I'm back on the retired list, whether I want to be or not. If I'm him, I am not signing any deals, any new contracts longer than 1 year. And I'm sure WWE wouldn't like that very much. They like locking guys into multi-year contracts. But if I'm Daniel Bryan, I'm signing little one-year deals like Sting used to do every year with Dixie Carter to stay with TNA. If I'm Bryan, I'm signing little one-year deals every year going forward. I'm not locking myself into a 3-4-5-year deal. Now, Bryan teaming with Shane McMahon against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn is still the match that makes the most sense for WrestleMania. Right now, it's Owens and Zayn one-on-one. I'm sure that's going to change. And Bryan and Nakamura, they can save for SummerSlam. Because I saw some people when there was talk about AJ being injured. Oh, maybe they could slot Bryan in there. No. And I wouldn't. I don't know that I would do that anyway. But that's a match you could save for SummerSlam. But I saw some people crying about the tag team idea. Not a lot of people, but some people were bitching about this whole, oh, they're going to put Daniel Bryan in there with Shane McMahon. It's like, it's literally been built up for the better part of 7 months on TV. I just don't understand it. Like, just look at the storyline. It is the match that makes the most sense. Despite the fact that Owens and Zayn are now quote-unquote fired in storyline, that's the match that makes the most sense. That or Bryan against Shane. But they seem to have gotten away from that, all the issues they were having. So that doesn't look to be the direction anymore. But that literally is the only match that makes sense. I would rather have the tag match. If you gave me the option of that or Bryan one-on-one with Shane, I would rather go with the tag match because I think Owens and Zayn deserve a high-profile match to cap off this program, to climax this whole thing. That's A. And B, I want to see Bryan get in the ring, in an actual WWE ring against Kevin Owens. I want to see him get in a ring against Sami Zayn for the first time, at least in this company. It's kind of hard to believe it would be the first time in this company because it just feels like Owens and Zayn have been on the main roster forever already. But Owens got called up literally right after Bryan got taken out of the ring. So they have never crossed paths before in an official match in WWE. So if you are upset about this being a tag team match most likely, relax. Relax. Cool your jets. They cleared this guy to return for more than just one match. He's going to wrestle multiple matches. There will be plenty of opportunities for him to step in the ring with all those other guys that I mentioned. And another interesting aspect about the fallout from all this is what now becomes of all the other talent who have been told by WWE doctors, you will never be cleared to wrestle in a WWE ring again. Daniel Bryan was told the same thing and now he's back. So what then becomes of someone like Edge, right? Or someone like Paige, who is much younger than Daniel Bryan. WWE never officially announced that, you know, Paige was done. It was PW Insider that broke that story. But she's also never denied it, and she's also never wrestled a single match since. WWE will not even let her get physical. They won't even let her be part of a beatdown angle. If you know, Absolution is in the ring and they're kicking somebody, she can't even do that. You're going to tell me there's no smoke to that fire? Why? Because we haven't seen the doctor's report? How many times do we see doctor's reports? Okay, when news like this gets reported. Sometimes it's not accurate. Most of the time it is. So, as far as that goes, Edge, he talked about this on his podcast. He said what he has is very different than what Daniel Bryan has, or what he got retired for. Edge has cervical spinal stenosis, which is what Steve Austin has. It's a narrowing of the spinal column. One wrong bump, and he could end up in a wheelchair. He could end up dead. Sheamus is said to have spinal stenosis. It must not be so bad because he's still wrestling, but supposedly he has spinal stenosis as well, which will get worse over time. If he has that, it's not something that gets better. It gets worse. It could definitely shorten his career. Edge made it very clear on the podcast this past week, he will never again be cleared by WWE. Paige's injury, said to be very similar. She also has scoliosis on top of that. She too, unlikely to ever again wrestle for WWE. But she did tweet her congratulations to Daniel Bryan. And she ended with, gives hope to a lot of people to never give up on your passion. And she tagged at WWE in the tweet. Like, she's trying to send them a message. You can send all the messages you want. I don't see you coming back. It is a completely different injury. Corey Graves, on the other hand, he did retire due to concussions the way that Brian did. And so I think if you're somebody like Corey Graves, you've got to be thinking to yourself, hey, that could be me one day. I could come back. I'm a young guy. It's still time for me to make my return. I don't know that he would want to. You know, Nigel McGuinness. I'll use him as an example. Nigel McGuinness was devastated when he was, you know, told that he would not be cleared by WWE. And he had issues. He had, like, bicep tears that didn't heal right. And then I think he also may have had concussion issues. Actually, I think in his case, it was the hepatitis that he had. And then remember that whole movie, The Last of McGuinness, which was actually really sad and kind of depressing to watch because you could tell this guy was just completely devastated by not being able to, you know, do what he wanted to do and having an offer given to him and then taken away from him. And then he's transitioned, though, and, you know, he was the matchmaker in Ring of Honor. Now he's transitioned into an announcer for NXT. And somebody asked him on Twitter and he said, look, I did not retire because somebody said I wouldn't be cleared. It was my choice. I could come back anytime I want to. The hepatitis is gone. So I don't know that there's anything stopping Nigel McGuinness from coming back to the ring one day if he wanted to. But he seems to be very happy and very comfortable doing the announcing. He's comfortable where he is doing what he's doing. Perhaps Corey Graves, it's the same situation. He may not want to come back. He may be very happy doing what he's doing. I think Graves would be way more likely to come back one day than someone like Paige would be, but I like him in the booth, so hopefully he stays put. Speaking of Paige, the thought did cross my mind with all these firsts that they've been doing lately with the women, the first this, the first that, women, you know, being empowered in the company and all this. If Daniel Bryan is no longer going to be the GM of SmackDown after WrestleMania, I could see them making Paige the new GM to make her, you know, just have a female authority figure on the show. It wouldn't be the first time that we've had a female GM or a female authority figure. Obviously, we had Vicky Guerrero on SmackDown. We had AJ Lee had a stint on Raw as the Raw GM. Taryn Terrell was the GM of ECW for a while, for those of you who remember her from her days as Tiffany. And of course, Stephanie has been haunting our dreams forever. But if Paige is not wrestling, they could split Mandy and Sonya away from her after WrestleMania and have her take Bryan's place on SmackDown. Or keep him as the GM through whenever the draft is that they're supposedly doing, I think at Backlash in May, and then they could shock everybody then by having Paige announce as the GM. So I'm just thinking in my head, for Paige, she's not wrestling. And I know they have that movie coming out, they want her to be able to promote it, I don't know when it's coming out. She can't be with Absolution forever, so what do you do with her? If you want to have her on TV, making her a GM is probably something that would make sense. And all I'm saying is, you know, with there being more of a heavy female influence on these shows, I think it's only a matter of time, whether it's her or someone else, who ends up as a GM on one of the two shows. Mark Henry is going from the Hall of Pain to the Hall of Fame. The announcement was made on TV this past week. I believe he is the final person going into the class of 2018 WWE Hall of Fame in New Orleans. I, for one, am very happy for him. I think it's well-deserved. I hope he dusts off the salmon jacket. They should put that thing in the Smithsonian one day, but if not, I guess one day if they have a physical WWE Hall of Fame, I'd settle for that. But he absolutely has to wear that thing at the Hall of Fame. I mean, come on, he has to. Or maybe wear it under his tux or something and then do the big reveal and show everybody the salmon jacket. His career has been very up and down, I think is a polite way to put it. I think that they had high hopes for him when he first came in. They signed him to a big multi-million dollar 10-year contract. And certainly his push or his place on the show, I don't know, warranted that type of deal. But that's sort of the way things worked out. I don't know that he ever became as big of a star as they had hoped he would be. He was very injury prone over the years. He got hurt a lot. He was, you know, out of action quite a bit and had a lot of start and stop pushes. You know, initially he was part of the Nation after his, you know, little bit of time where he was Olympian Mark Henry. Then he joined the Nation. Then he became Sexual Chocolate. Then there was that period where he had Teddy Long as his manager. There was another period where, well, the most famous period, of course, being the Hall of Fame back in 2011. That's where he finally hit it big. He finally hit gold. Became world champion, beat Randy Orton 2 straight pay-per-views, was having a nice little run for himself when, what else? He got hurt. And so they took the championship off of him. But when you look at the kind of the big picture of his career, he is somebody who I think ended up becoming a success in spite of all of those other failures. So whether it's a gimmick fail, injury fails, whatever the case may be, he ended up becoming a world champion and a successful top player on one of the two brands. When I don't know that many people thought he would. He was already older and you know, beat up after all the injuries by that point. But he proved everybody wrong. I certainly never thought that we would get this Mark Henry renaissance late in his career. And I would actually be looking forward to seeing Mark Henry on television every single week, because they rarely gave me a reason to care enough about him. And again, half the time he was out hurt. So the Hall of Pain thing, I think, is really what defines him as kind of a true Hall of Famer in this company, and somebody who I think is more than deserving of being in that position. You know, he wasn't at the level of a Rock or an Austin, but, you know, not a lot of people are. You know, but he's now become an elder statesman in that company. He's somebody who's widely respected. And it's kind of like when you have your dad, and then one day you realize, oh shit, I became my father, right? That's sort of what Mark Henry has now become, I think, in WWE. He's become this sort of dad-like figure behind the scenes to a lot of people. He works now for the company as a producer, so he's helping sort of usher in this next era of talent. And he's still contributing. He's still making contributions to the company in that way. He's still doing a lot of public relations work for the company. He's a great ambassador. You know, he's a great spokesperson, I think, for the company. And I'm really happy that he's going into the Hall of Fame. And I think it makes the Hall of Fame class this year that much stronger, because I made the comment and some people jumped on me for it because I was misrepresented a bit, in my opinion. Not that this is the worst Hall of Fame class ever. I never said that. What I said was that this is the most underwhelming class in many years. And it's true. I stand by that. There have been Hall of Fame classes like last year. I think we had, what, Kurt Angle and... Was last year? Last year was Angle, DDP, I think, right? The Midnight Express, right? Cornette was brought in for the speech. I think that was last year. That was a strong class, as I think a lot of the other ones were. This one, I don't look at it as being all that strong, but I think putting Henry in there made it a little bit stronger. Who does the induction is another question that I've seen asked. I think John Cena would be an appropriate person to do the induction. That kind of ties in with the whole fake retirement angle, the salmon jacket I mentioned. So I think to have Cena do it and have Henry teased, giving him another World's Strongest Slam on stage and then kind of stop short, I think that would be a fun moment. I think if not Cena, if he can't do it for some reason, I think Braun Strowman would be another fine choice. Braun tweeted that he was over the moon to hear that Henry was going into the Hall of Fame. Because it was Mark Henry who recommended him to WWE in the first place. He would not be in WWE right now were it not for Mark Henry. And so I think it would be very appropriate, if not John Cena, to have Braun Strowman be the one to do the induction. Now, speaking of Mark Henry, we all know what he thinks it would take for Hulk Hogan to one day be welcomed back into the WWE locker room by all of the African-American talent behind the scenes. He told TMZ a few weeks ago that if Hogan went around to all the black stars on the roster and apologized for those racist remarks that got leaked a few years ago, he thinks that he would be welcomed back. Maybe not by everybody, but by most people, he would have paid his penance and they would be willing to welcome him back. However, on Busted Open Radio this week, Henry was on and he told a little bit of a different tune. This is what he said. He said, there are leaked videos of the Andre story on HBO coming up. I guess there's an opening for it in Los Angeles. They're all getting ready because the Andre the Giant documentary is about to premiere in a few weeks. So clips are starting to leak of talking heads, you know, talking about Andre during the documentary. Hogan is one of those talking heads. So that's what Henry is referring to here. He says it's kind of a deal where you have to accept it. He's a public figure. It doesn't mean that everything he's done is forgiven. You just have to take the good with the bad and see how you could help the situation. I'm sitting on the chair of the delegation, and they're not ready. I've had many talks with dozens of guys, and the consensus is that there's a lot of work to be done to heal that wound and to fix that wall. The delegation is pretty much all of the more established African-American wrestlers in the country and in the world, for that matter. Every promotion. There's not a wrestling promotion that does not house someone from the delegation. By the way, the delegation sounds like a pretty cool faction name. I know we already had one called The Nation, but I'm just saying, the delegation is a cool faction name. As far as what Hogan will need to do, this is what Henry said. There's going to have to be more community service and outside work, support for programs and even creative programs that deal with the diversity in the workplace. I believe that everybody should be given a second chance, but I also believe that you have to own your issue, whatever that issue is. You've got to try to make closure on everybody's behalf and not just your own. Now, this is all coming up because PW Insider is reporting that Hulk Hogan has had discussions recently with WWE about a possible return after 3 years in exile. One rumor that's been floating around this week has him coming back to induct Hillbilly Jim into the Hall of Fame in New Orleans. Hillbilly Jim apparently wants Hulk Hogan to be the one to induct him. He is the preferred inductor for Hillbilly Jim. And it was Hogan on TV, if you think back to television in the 80s, it was Hogan who was the one who introduced Hillbilly Jim into WWE. I think, though, that that is a completely ridiculous idea. The idea that you are going to bring Hulk Hogan back to induct Hillbilly Jim into the Hall of Fame, that'd be like WCW putting Lash LaRue in their Hall of Fame and having Sting do the induction. Not to mention, Hogan is just going to totally overshadow everything else. It should not be about Hogan for a change. It should be about, you know, it should not be about everybody cheering him and chanting his name and chanting one more match or booing him and protesting his being there at the Hall of Fame in the first place. It should be about the people who were there to be honored. It should be about the people who were actually going into the Hall of Fame. It's their night. It's not his. Now, whether that happens or not, he is in talks to come back. WWE put a statement out. They said, we have had discussions with Terry Bollea about how he can help others learn from his mistakes. However, he is not under contract with WWE. So that was their statement. The reality is this. He is not going to be able to come back without people rehashing the sex tape stuff. You can go on and on about it wasn't right. His rights were violated. It was leaked. It was leaked. Yeah, it was leaked. And what happened to him sucked. Absolutely. But it leaked. You can't stick cotton balls in your ears and pretend you didn't hear it. It's unfortunate that it did for him, but it leaked. We heard it. It's out there. You cannot ignore it. It doesn't change that. I don't know what people don't understand about this. Just because you don't agree with the means in which it got leaked doesn't mean that you just sort of lock it back up in the safe and pretend that you didn't hear what you heard. We all heard it. It's out there. That's it. Now he has to deal with the fallout from it. Now you could also say, well, it's been 3 years. He's already dealt with it. He's moved on. What else can he do? Well, you know, hey, he's the one who wants to come back to WWE. There ain't nothing stopping Hulk Hogan from living out the rest of his days peacefully on the beach down in Florida. There's a lot of things Hulk Hogan can do. Hulk Hogan wants to come back to WWE. And in order to do that, there's certain things he's going to have to do. There's a nice big old shit sandwich that is only half eaten. And he's going to have to eat it. That's just the way it is. If you go back and you listen to that leaked audio, it's pretty awful what he said. I made this comment a few weeks ago. It'd been a while since I actually heard what he said. You know, I remember what happened, obviously. I know he used the N-word and some other stuff that was very offensive, but you got to go back and actually listen to the audio to really appreciate how awful it was, what he said. And it's not the first time that he's done this either. I mean, there was a time when his son was locked up in jail, and there's jailhouse audio recordings that leaked as well. And, you know, he also was saying things on those calls that, frankly, did not paint him in a very good light when it came to race relations. So this is a pattern with Hogan. This is not an isolated incident. Oh, he didn't know what he was saying. Bullshit. It was awful what he said. If he wants to come back and he wants to do something positive and constructive, that's great. But to bring him back, let's say, as an ambassador to the company, or as the SmackDown GM, let's say, now that SmackDown's going to need a new GM soon, that would be completely tone-deaf on the part of WWE. Him coming back as a talking head on the network, or as part of this Andre documentary on HBO, I'm okay with that. I mean, he's full of shit with a lot of the stuff he says on these things, but how can you have a documentary about the life of Andre the Giant without talking to Hulk Hogan? So that's fine. As far as I'm concerned, I got no problem with that. But it's just, it's a weird thing because as a fan, as a wrestling fan for so many years, you grow up with these guys. I might not be a fan right now were it not for Hulk Hogan. In fact, I'm almost sure I wouldn't be. I hate to see the guy relegated to the dustbin of history. I would have liked to have seen him go out on a higher note. It's like when guys overstay their welcome, whether it's a Hogan or a Ric Flair, and they don't know when to quit. Undertaker is sort of kind of in that category now, and you start to feel bad, like, man, I wish these guys would have, you know, quit when they were on top. It's like, you know, Seinfeld saying, why'd you end your show? Well, I wanted to go out on top, even though I think the ratings were already slipping, but whatever. You don't want to go out when I'm on top. We all want to see these guys, I think, go out like in a blaze of glory or go out when they still are at the top of their game, and that's just not how it works. And in Hogan's case, there was a lot of shit that happened in his life with his family and everything else that just, he just crashed and burned. It's not the way that I would have wanted to see Hulk Hogan end his career. But again, you can't ignore the bad stuff because it's convenient to do so. Does Hogan deserve a second chance? I'd like to see him have a chance to write a better final chapter before it's too late. There's a lot of guys that are not around anymore. Piper's gone, Savage is gone, Dusty is gone. You know, we still have Hogan and Flair, although Flair, we almost lost Flair last year. And you never know. You just never know how much time is left. I'd like to see the guy have a chance to write a better final chapter. But I could also understand if there are people listening to this who don't want to see the guy's face on TV ever again. They have every right to feel that way. And also, I don't think he ever has to be under contract to WWE again. He can't wrestle anymore. He can barely move. His back is so bad. He can't be a spokesperson for the company after what happened, because how the hell are you going to do that? And him being in a recurring TV role like the GM or something on television every week, having to memorize lines, is a terrible idea. Let us not forget that one time on SmackDown when he mistakenly referred to himself, he called himself a gay guy. And that was back when SmackDown was still taped. Now the show is live every week. So I think that would be a horrible role for him. WWE, they went out of their way in that statement to say, they made it very clear, he is not under contract. He doesn't need to be. The company doesn't need him. But that doesn't mean that he still can't work with them in some capacity. I mentioned the Greatest Royal Rumble event next month in Saudi Arabia coming up on April 27th. We now have confirmation that the show will indeed be airing live on the WWE Network. Roman Reigns had already let it leak in a radio interview a few weeks ago, but some people who tried to cancel their WWE Network subscription were greeted by a screen that listed all of the upcoming live programming coming to the network, and among the shows listed was the Greatest Royal Rumble. This is a show with a big 50-man Royal Rumble match, 7 championship matches being promoted, although none of them are women's title matches because the women will not be wrestling on that show because the women are not allowed to wrestle on the show. They've still got quite a bit of catching up to do over there when it comes to stuff like that. And to show you how all out they are going to make this a special show, Jerry Lawler confirmed on his podcast that he and Jim Ross will be handling the announcing for the show, and not just like a match here and a match there. The way he portrayed it, they are going to be the announce crew for the entire show. That would be the first show in a decade since 2008 that the two of them have called a WWE show solo. So they're bringing out the big guns here for this show. And I guess, you know, with Lawler and King, this is also a chance for them to make up for that disaster at Raw 25 when they barely got any screen time at all. Lawler also said the show is going to be airing live on TV in Saudi Arabia. Sky Sports has announced the show will be airing live at 5 p.m. UK time on Sky Sports Box Office. And for all you Aussie fans, it'll be airing live at 2 a.m. on Main Event, Saturday, April 28th, with replays all weekend long. So if you are in those parts of the world, you will be able to watch the Greatest Royal Rumble And I'm looking forward to it. I like it when they do these kinds of specials. They're somewhere else that they're not usually usually in. In this case, it's a big stadium in another country. And I think they need to do more specials like that. Don't do too many of them. I think they may have one in Australia coming up in October. You know, you spread them out over the course of the year. Maybe you do one quarterly or something. I think that's fine. Raw from Monday night. I just want to focus on just some of the key stuff here. And by the way, the Twitter poll, we had over 3,000 votes. And it was overwhelmingly positive reaction. 73% thumbs up, only 27% thumbs down. And actually, both shows this week, Raw and SmackDown, got over 3,000 votes in their respective polls, which is way up, especially for SmackDown. That is way up from usual, so there's clearly a lot of interest going into WrestleMania. So for whatever complaints I see about the build to WrestleMania, it seems to be working. If their numbers and our numbers are any indication, the interest level is way, way up. That Brock Lesnar-Roman Reigns segment that opened Monday's show has far and away the most views of anything all week on WWE's YouTube channel. Almost 9 million views and counting. The Ronda Rousey segment, which was dark, it did not air on TV, where she gave Dana Brooke the overhead throw. That got over 6 million views so far. Daniel Bryan's speech on SmackDown was way behind that, over a million. So whatever they're doing, it seems to be working. Brock did get booed when he came out on Monday night. He was not booed out of the building or anything, and he also got some cheers. I don't want to make it sound like he was universally booed or anything like that, but he got more, I don't know, he got more boos than I expected going in. They did seem to get Roman some sympathy with that beatdown, or maybe they just succeeded in getting people to think Brock Lesnar is a lazy fuck who doesn't care about his job. Whatever it was, it seemed to work on Monday. Reigns showed up through the crowd. He was suspended, of course, by Vince McMahon, so let's come through the crowd with no theme music. Kurt Angle had Roman handcuffed by U.S. Marshals, who Reigns beat up, until Brock Lesnar finally decided to come to work. I would hate to have Brock Lesnar German suplex me in general, let alone with my hands cuffed in front of me, which is what happened to Roman Reigns here. There's no way to break your fall, so that sucked for him. So they ended up carrying him out of the ring until Brock ran back down to the ring. He overturned the stretcher that Roman was on. I mean, he beat the hell out of Roman Reigns. As beatdowns go, I thought this was good. I thought this was a good progression of the storyline heading into their match at WrestleMania. They're doing as good of a job as they can be expected to do. And so I give them a thumbs up on that. Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax, now official for WrestleMania. I would not change the title at WrestleMania. I think we're already getting a women's title change with Charlotte and Asuka. I don't think they need to do both on the same show. It's only the first match. I would save the title change because I do think Nia is going to get the belt. I would save it for Backlash. That's what I would do. Meanwhile, Braun Strowman does have a tag team partner to challenge the bar at WrestleMania, but he's not talking. He did some interview. He says, I have a partner. He wouldn't say who it is. So he is going to have a partner. He's not going to go it alone. I had pitched the idea of Strowman and Samoa Joe as a team. The minute the news leaked that Sheamus and Cesaro would be wrestling a makeshift team and not a normal tag team at WrestleMania. So before we even knew that Braun Strowman would be in that match, I pitched the idea of him and Joe as a tag team. I've been all in on Braun and Joe as a team long before anybody else was, and I still feel the same way. To me, any way to get Joe in a, you know, reasonably well-promoted match on that WrestleMania card is a plus. Now I'm seeing that Samoa Joe may be first in line to challenge Roman Reigns for the Universal title coming out of WrestleMania. That sounds to me, if that's true, that sounds to me like we're looking at a surprise ambush on Raw the night after WrestleMania. I hate that Joe would miss his second straight WrestleMania. It's not a bad spot to be in. Look, if he's challenging for the title coming out of WrestleMania, not a bad spot for him to be in. But boy, I'd be pretty bummed for him. Second year in a row, him missing WrestleMania, especially the run that he was on. But like I said, not a bad spot to be in if the rumor is true, although I think anybody who is first in line to challenge Roman Reigns is not going to win the championship from Roman Reigns. So I think there's going to be a lot of very upset fans who don't like that idea. AJ Styles, he was first in line to challenge Roman after Roman won the championship, I think, right? Coming out of WrestleMania 32. Styles lost two straight pay-per-view matches, but they were two of the best matches of Roman's career. Maybe Joe can do the same. As great as John Cena was the week before with his promo about The Undertaker, this was a big step back, I felt, this past week. I know they're just kind of killing time and just building anticipation for The Undertaker coming back this week and accepting the challenge and making the match official, but this was not nearly as good as what they did the week before. He was upset Undertaker did not have enough respect for him to give him a yes or a no answer. He called him a coward. That brought out Kane, who chokeslammed John Cena and left him laying. That also sets up Cena versus Kane on Raw for tomorrow night. Oh, joy. So, here's my question. Does he pin Kane first, and then the lights go out? Or do the lights go out just before he's about to beat Kane? Is Kane still that important that it matters if you beat him? I guess that's the real question here. Because to me, it's one of those two ways is what we'll probably end up seeing tomorrow night. And then Undertaker can show up and he can kick him in the dick and he can say, leave me alone, I'm retired. Ultimate Deletion. Can't believe it's taken me an hour to get to Ultimate Deletion. There's so much to talk about here. I really liked Ultimate Deletion. I really did. This is what we've been waiting for. This is what we've been waiting for. All the people who loved Final Deletion. All the people who loved Broken Matt and TNA. This is it. You're finally getting what you want. Those of us who like the Broken Matt stuff and wanted to see this come to WWE and not have WWE meddle in it and fuck it up, they didn't. Now, was it as good as Final Deletion? Was it as good as, what was the other one? Tag Team Apocalypto? No. Those were better. This was a copy of the original without adding too much in the way of any, you know, wacky new stuff, but I still loved it. I thought it was very entertaining. It was the best part of the entire show. If you don't like this kind of stuff, you're probably thinking, what do you want, acid or something? But I thought it was the best part of the entire show. It was the part that entertained me the most. Hopefully, this is the first of many more that we get like this, so they can add some new things. They can eventually use locations other than just the Hardy compound. This really is, I mean, to me, this is as close to those old 24/7 hardcore matches as we've seen in WWE. In terms of just doing something that's out of the usual arena setting. And I always dig stuff like that. Sometimes it fails miserably, okay? I.e. the House of Horrors match last year. But more often than not, I like it when they kind of go outside their comfort zone. Now, I do not like, and I do not understand at all, having Michael Cole basically bury the match beforehand and apologize on commentary, apologize for the match before it even aired. I'm sorry for what you are about to watch. That was the big lead-in from their lead announcer going into the main event of Monday Night Raw. I'm sorry for what you are about to watch is what Michael Cole was told to say. He also called it obnoxious. Michael Cole calling something else obnoxious. Now I've heard it all. Now I have truly heard it all. Matt's been tweeting about this. I don't know if this is all planned or if Matt's just having fun with it and sort of he sees everybody being upset by it and maybe he didn't know that Cole said that and now he's just, you know, he's threatening to delete Michael Cole. Look, if he throws him into the lake of reincarnation and he comes out as 1998 Jim Ross, then I'm okay with it. It's all worth it in the end. Otherwise, that was just dumb. This is your main event. Your main event of the evening, and that's how you introduce it? They preemptively apologize for what they're about to air? Where was their apology before that Punjabi prison match last year? Where was Tom Phillips apologizing before the start of almost every SmackDown for the last 6 months? But this they apologize for. The entire cast of characters was there. Broken Matt, Brother Nero made a cameo, hopefully a sober one. Queen Rebecca on the piano, King Maxwell, Lord Wolfgang, Senor Benjamin, Vanguard 1, Skarsgård, the dilapidated boat was there, everything was there. We even got Pyro. In the middle of the match with Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt, Vanguard 1 set off a bunch of fireworks. Now, Matt probably had to pay for it out of his own pocket, but we finally got Pyro back on Raw. All you pyromaniacs out there could be very happy about that. So, this very much had the look and the feel of Final Deletion, only this time they put titles on the screen to identify each new area they brawl to. So, you know, one was called the Dilapidated City, which was basically, it had a barn that resembled Bray's shack in the woods where Randy Orton burned the remains of Sister Abigail, Orton the arsonist. And yes, like I said, we had Skarsgård, the Dilapidated Boat, made a cameo here as well. And they're leaving so much money on the table if they don't sell little Dilapidated Boat replicas and Vanguard 1 toys. There was also the Land of Obsolete Men, or as some people call it these days, Impact Wrestling. I kid Impact Wrestling. Their ratings are up the last few weeks, I've noticed. It's still in that 300,000 to 400,000 range, but their ratings are actually on an upward trend of late, which is great for them, and they have this big Impact versus Lucha Underground show coming up WrestleMania weekend at WrestleCon in New Orleans. And look, hey, two of the biggest homegrown TNA names are in championship matches at WrestleMania. AJ Styles and Bobby Roode. Between that and the Broken Hardy stuff coming to Raw, WWE right now would be worse off without the influence of TNA. That's a fact. So anyway, they made their way to Hardy's garage, called the Dome of Deletion, which included a piano, a ladder, a wheelchair, and a lawnmower. Him deciding whether to use the mower of lawn or chair of wheels while Beethoven played in the background may have been better than the Daniel Bryan speech on Tuesday. I may be exaggerating, or I may not be. I'll let you decide. But I was thinking about this. Does that make me the caster of pods? Or the monster of solitude? Should I start calling myself that? It's sad. That sounds very obnoxious. They ended up by the Lake of Reincarnation. This is where Jeff Hardy made his cameo. Matt hit a twist of fate and pinned Bray, the eater of pins. Can't even get a win in someone else's backyard. He's not even a good backyard wrestler. He then got tossed into the lake, and when Senor Benjamin tried to fish him out of the water, he told Matt he couldn't find him. So the belief is that he may be repackaged or reincarnated as some other character on TV. I think it would be the best thing that ever happened to the guy, for him to be reincarnated into anything. Reincarnate him into a fucking pigeon at this point. It would be better than what he's been doing the last few months. And it doesn't even really have to be a radical change either. He becomes Broken. Broken Bray. Or Woken Wyatt. I like Broken Bray better. But he doesn't have to radically change his look. But just, you know, pivoting, into a babyface. I think he's long overdue for a face run anyway, and having him become part of the whole Broken Hardy act, I don't know if he's going to end up building a big faction of people, but I think that would actually be a great idea. And tell me that, give me one good reason why it wouldn't be. What is he doing now that would be so much better than what he would be doing if he became Broken? He's already broken. He's already broke. He's that toy you try to fix with super glue and it don't work. You're one step away from throwing that toy away. He's been broken for a while now. You got nothing to lose here. It's not like we haven't seen programs like this before, where two guys feud, and then at the end they go from being mortal enemies to being great friends and allies. He can join the broken universe and be part of this great war that Matt seems to be fighting. That's what I would do. Ultimate Deletion was cut from the Hulu version of Raw. Hulu says that they just stream what they're given. Don't blame us. We don't do edits. What we got is what WWE gave us. So the only thing I could think is that WWE wanted to drive more traffic to all of the individual clips, because they cut this thing up into like half a dozen different clips and put them all on their YouTube channel. So maybe they just wanted to drive more traffic there. But then I saw they also didn't even air the match in the building for the arena crowd. Imagine going to the show looking forward to Ultimate Deletion, and then they don't even show it. They show it on TV, and then live in the building they do something else. I mean, maybe they remembered how badly the crowd crapped on that House of Horrors match in the building last year, and they got cold feet. But I would have been pissed. If I had tickets to the show that night and they didn't air the match for all of us in the building, I would have been furious. SmackDown from this week, I mean, there isn't really a whole lot to go over. I mean, the big thing, it was the Daniel Bryan show. He came out and gave this great speech announcing that he was cleared and he was back, and everybody went nuts and did yes chants. And he said, you know, don't ever stop fighting, never give up. And he praised Brie. He almost lost it talking about his wife, Brie, and how she was really the inspiration behind him going to all the doctors and fighting and doing what he had to do to get cleared. It was this great, great emotional speech. You know, I think the real reason that people can connect so easily with him is that he just comes across as a real person. He doesn't come across as a machine. He's not out there memorizing lines. I've never watched a Daniel Bryan promo, let alone this one on Tuesday, and felt like, you know, he was being overly scripted, or that he was working so hard to remember what his line was supposed to be. And I did get that impression when, you know, he would do a lot of those GM, those corny GM backstage skits. But I mean, like, in the ring like this, doing a promo, I don't know that there's anybody as real as him in this company. And yeah, he's not much to look at. You don't look at him and he doesn't stop you in your tracks. He doesn't intimidate people, I don't think. He just looks like a normal person. But I think that's why people love the guy so much. And that's why it's so easy to root for him. And this was as real as a speech as you will probably see most weeks on WWE television. And it plays into a very real story. He was not cleared. Now he is. It's not just a storyline. So I thought it was a great segment. And then the show closing angle I thought was really well done too. And I agree with people in that it would have been even better had we not known that he was cleared. Bryan is another one, like Paige, who they don't let him get physical. He has not taken any shots. He has not dished out any shots. The closest thing was he was a referee. He's been referee for a few different matches. I guess that's as physical as he's gotten since his retirement. And so, knowing this, if all of a sudden Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn put the boots to him and beat the shit out of him on TV, that would have been like, whoa. And I think that would have been a nice little surprise. But again, I don't blame them for spoiling it and doing it the way they did, because they got almost 3 million people, you know, to watch their show. But he did come out and reluctantly he fired Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. This was like the nicest firing I've ever seen. Normally people come out on TV and they're like, you're fired. Or they insult them and they, you know, kick him to the curb. In this case, Bryan was like, dude, I don't want to do this. You guys are awesome. It's not me, it's you. That was the whole thing. It's not you, it's me, right? Actually, I guess in this case, it would be it's not me, it's you, because he flat out said, look, you beat up your boss. You beat up Shane McMahon. You didn't even have to do that. Shane already put you guys on the WrestleMania card. He said he was stepping aside. He was taking a leave of absence, and you guys went and beat him up anyway. I have no choice. I hate to do this. You guys are awesome. I think you're two of the best in the company. But oh, by the way, you're fired. It's like, I really thought they were just going to shake hands and they were going to go on their way. But of course that didn't happen. And they ended up beating up Daniel Bryan. Bryan made a comeback. It'd been so long since I've seen a hot Daniel Bryan comeback, and I had forgotten how great they were. And he threw those corner drop kicks and I cringed every time he landed on his head, but it was great. And in the end, he was overwhelmed. He took a Huluva kick, and he got the apron powerbomb, which was more than I thought he would take in his first night back, but there it is. He got powerbombed on the apron, and it was sort of like a big injury angle to end the show, and so that makes the SmackDown commissioner now and the SmackDown GM, both of whom have been laid out by these two men. If it's me, I have Owens and Zayn. I saw they did a little, they crashed the party, I think, at the house show last night. They did a little run-in in their street clothes. If it's me, though, I have them come to Raw tomorrow night looking for a job, thinking, hey, we're going to get one over on Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon by signing with Stephanie's brand. Surely she'll sign us. We're two big stars, two big pickups for the Raw brand. But then I would have Kurt Angle say, you're not welcome here, and have security kick them out. And then, of course, I'm sure they'll be there on Tuesday. But I think it would be cool if they did that by having them show up on Raw. But even Kurt Angle said, well, you guys went too far. You guys went too far. You're not welcome here. And one of the best Raw moments, and I know I've said this before, one of the best Raw moments really in the history of the show. I was going to say the last like 5-10 years, but I would even say in the history of the entire show, not number one, but it's on the list, was the night that Bryan broke away from the Wyatt family And he ended up inside the cage after the match. Just him and Bray all alone. Harper and Rowan were locked out. They couldn't get in. And Brian just beat the hell out of Bray Wyatt and gave him the yes kicks. Rarely have I heard a crowd in the last decade as loud as they were in support of Brian during that segment. And ironically, he was concussed for that entire segment. So, because of course he was. But I will never, the point of all this is, I will never ever get tired of seeing Daniel Bryan kick the crap out of people while the crowd loses its shit. That, to me, will never, ever get old. AJ Styles, the only other thing of note on SmackDown I wanted to mention really is AJ. AJ is hurt. We don't know the nature of the injury. We don't know if it's a leg injury, a knee injury. It sounds like it is, but we don't know. WWE has not disclosed what the injury is. Triple H was doing an interview. Somebody asked him, what is the status of AJ Styles going into WrestleMania? Triple H didn't deny it. He didn't say, oh, that's fake news. There is no injury. He basically admitted it. This is what he said. He said, AJ is working diligently on rehabbing his injuries and getting himself in tip-top shape for WrestleMania. We are hoping for the best. Right now, he says he feels a lot better and will be ready to go. Obviously, we'll get him doctors to make sure that he is ready to go and get him medical clearance if that is possible. Well, that doesn't sound ominous at all, if that is possible. Look, I am of the belief that you would have to rip off all of the man's limbs and hide them just so he can't reattach them himself to not have AJ Styles on that card at WrestleMania. He will be there. I feel like he'll be there no matter what. I just don't want him to go into a match like this, which people have been looking forward to for a very long time. If he is really hurt, hurt badly, and he goes out there and has, a performance that is not of sort of up to snuff for what would be expected of somebody like AJ Styles. And I think he would hate that too. I don't think he wants to go out there and half-ass it. Look, AJ Styles at 75% is still better than probably most people in the world. So I'm hoping whatever it is, it isn't serious. Heal it, wrap it up, whatever needs to be done. The good thing, I guess, if he had to miss WrestleMania for some reason, first of all, it would be a disaster. Because A, it's AJ, and B, he's the WWE champion. It's not like it's just a random singles match. They'd have to figure something out. But the good thing is, it is a pretty loaded top of the card. It's not like if that match goes down in flames, the whole card goes down in flames. There are enough attractions on the card where I think it would be okay. But I don't think anybody wants to see AJ not be able to be there. And he was at the live event in Trenton, New Jersey last night. He was out there. I think he was in a six-man tag. He's been doing a lot of six-man tags so that they can keep him out of the ring as much as possible. It was him in the New Day. And there was video that leaked, and it was showing him doing like a dance in the ring, and he hit a phenomenal forearm at the end of the match. So it looks like he's okay enough. But, you read those words from Triple H, and he was also talking about there being a plan B in case of anything, and I get scared. Of all the times for him to get hurt, this is obviously not an ideal time, but I think in the end he'll be okay.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT, they were back at Full Sail this week for the first time in over a month. Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, they continue to build up this feud, which is obviously building to a non-sanctioned match of some kind at TakeOver in New Orleans. Ciampa came out again, was not speaking, then he did speak, and he was just completely off his rocker. I mean, he just couldn't stand all the Johnny Gargano support and all the Johnny Gargano emoji signs in the crowd, and he was going around, and what was great about it was this was like classic old school wrestling here, where he was walking around the ringside area, Ciampa was. He almost got into it with an old lady. There was an old lady who was standing up to him. Reminds me of that time there was an old lady who took a swing once at Hulk Hogan, but she was old. So, she took a swing on a Tuesday and it almost connected on a Friday kind of thing. But he was doing that here and sort of trolling the fans and getting up in their face, and he ripped the sign out of the hands of one of the fans. The fan, though, took off his lucha mask, and it turned out to be Johnny Gargano. And he attacked Ciampa. He had to be literally carried, physically carried and removed from the building. And there was a YouTube video that got uploaded in the last couple of days. And so this was exclusive footage from after the NXT show. This didn't air on TV. This is great. Heavy Machinery, okay? Otis and the other guy. So they're coming out of the Performance Center. And it's just, they're talking about their workout that they just had. And I think it was Otis who referred to it. They're like, "Oh, we just had a serious sweat sesh." That's how they referred to it. And they're talking about how it's Tucker Knight. That's the other one. I don't want to disrespect Tucker Knight. It's Tucker Knight and Otis Dozovic. So they're talking about how it's bulking season. He's like, "Yeah, bulking." I don't know what Otis is wearing, by the way. It looked like he was wearing underwear. Either that or they were very, very short shorts. But it was very disturbing what he was wearing here, just out in public like this. Broad daylight. So they're walking and they're talking about their workout session. And then Otis spots Johnny Gargano. He's standing by his car, just leaning up against it like he's waiting for someone. Maybe he's waiting for his wife to come out. So they go over and they're, "Hey, Johnny, what's going on?" And Johnny tells them that he's got to come out eventually, referring to Ciampa. He is waiting for Tommaso Ciampa to make his exit, and he's going to go after him. And then he spots the car that Ciampa is driving, and he runs over to the car. He tries to reach in through the window to pull him out. Then Ciampa backed up. I thought he was going to run him over. Remember that Jerry Lawler angle with, was it Eddie Gilbert or Doug Gilbert? I think Eddie Gilbert, back in the USWA, where he actually did run Lawler over. I think he actually broke Lawler's hip in doing that. It looked like he killed him. But I thought he was going to run him over. He didn't, but he did drive off. And Johnny said, you can't hide forever. You can't hide forever, he said. The best part of this whole thing, you'd have to really listen closely because it was like a passing comment in the background. But as Johnny went, he saw Ciampa's car and went to go run after him. You can hear Otis and Tucker. I don't know if they were trying to stop Johnny. They were trying to like dissuade him from doing this. And you hear Otis, you know, when he looks at the car that Ciampa is driving, he just goes, "Good Lord, it's a Ford." I was like, did I hear that right? I went back and I listened to it. I'm like, yep, that's what he said. "Good Lord, it's a Ford." There's a catchphrase for you. Otis is just, he's so awesome. This guy is like a national treasure. I just hope when his time comes, and hopefully it's soon, because again, it's this weird thing where I want to see them on television, but I kind of don't, because I feel like they'll end up like Benjamin and Gable or something, where, you know, they'll have like one program and then you'll never see them again. But the guy is a national treasure. He is just fantastic. We had Charlie Caruso. This is the closest thing to like the old event centers that we used to get. They had a little event center type deal with her in studio for the Dusty Classic. And she's going over the brackets with us. And the latest update is that Tyler Bate has suffered some kind of an injury. And so, unfortunately, it's a knee injury, and he's got to be out for a couple of weeks, and so that means that he and Trent Seven, Mustache Mountain, they are out of their Dusty Classic first-round match, which was supposed to take place next week. But he's got to be out 2 weeks. Boy, they're really strict in NXT. You would think they would be like, "All right, we'll push the match back," but I guess with the timetable and everything, they have no choice. So that led to Roderick Strong pleading his case. He recorded a social media video. He was pleading to Regal, "Please let me be in here. I'll find a partner." And he did. And his partner turned out to be the UK champion, Pete Dunne. So we had Roddy and Pete Dunne against Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. This looked like this was going to be a hell of a match going in. And it was. Oh, it was. It was a very snug match. These four guys beat the hell out of each other. And it made for a fun match. In the end, it was a win for Roderick Strong and Pete Dunne. It was Strong hitting, I forgot what he calls the finish, where he picks the guy up for a suplex, releases him in midair, and it ends up in a backbreaker. So they pick up the win, and they're moving on in the tournament. We got a coming soon preview video for Ricochet. Ricochet is on his way in. They showed highlights of him wrestling an NXT match, so I don't know if that's a match that just won't ever air. I know he wrestled a match on the tapings from Center Stage, so it might have just been highlights from that match. I guess that match is not going to air, but he's coming soon. We had Raul Mendoza come out. He was on his way to the ring for, I presume, a match. But he got viciously attacked from behind by Andrade Cien Almas. He threw him off the ramp, off the stage. And Almas got in the ring with Zelina Vega. He was very upset, I guess, about what Aleister Black had said about him and him sicking Candice LeRae on his woman. So he was going off on Aleister Black, and at one point they bleeped out something he said. He called him a piece of, and they bleeped it. So you would think, okay, he called him a piece of shit. But if you read his lips, it looked to me like he called him a piece of crap. But they wanted to make you think he said shit. And that's fine, I mean, whatever, but they should have, you know, some quality control here. It was very obvious that he didn't say shit, and they bleeped it anyway. So that really was all there was to it. He said a bunch of stuff in Spanish, he said some stuff poorly in English. He did all the talking, Vega did none. That's probably why this maybe didn't come across so great, but he was very upset. That certainly showed, and I'm still looking forward to the match, the takeover. Main event was Adam Cole against Cassius Ohno. They had a pretty good match here. There was a great spot where Adam Cole was coming off the ropes. And he went to do like a, I think it was like a drop kick or something. And in midair, like Ohno, without any effort at all, he just picks his foot up. And just like boots, like he swats him away with his boot like he's nothing. This was as good as Cassius Ohno has looked, I think, in a long, long time. He's had some matches that really weren't all that great. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I think the last match he had was pretty good. I don't remember who it was against. But I know the match, you know, a takeover that he had with Velveteen Dream, I think it was. That was pretty disappointing. And, you know, there's a lot of talent that's in and coming into NXT. And it's sort of like he's been overshadowed. When he first came back, I mean, he was doing all the indies. And he had this great rep and this buzz around him. And ever since he came back, it's almost like he settled into this player coach type of position where I think he does kind of coach people and he's a good influence to have around the younger talent and helps around the performance center, but he's still an active wrestler. I don't want to say he's on his way out. He's going to be a full-time coach, although I could see that in his future, but I don't know. He just comes across to me as being more of like a player coach type and not somebody that they're ever really going to push seriously. Maybe that's the role for him. There's just this overabundance. There's this surplus of talent right now in NXT. And there really is just no big role for him at the moment. But, you know, as he showed here, he can still go out there and have a kick-ass match. So I thought this was good. Adam Cole did get the win. Hit the Shining Wizard to the back of the head and got the pin. He's the one going to take over. He's the one who's going to be in he's going to be in two different matches. So, yeah, I would hope that Adam Cole can get a win here against Cassius Ohno. And I believe the announcement is coming on next week's show, this Wednesday, about the... I won't spoil it for those who don't know, but there is a major announcement that Regal is making this week, and it does tie into another match that is being made for the TakeOver show. So, that was TakeOver this week. Before we get to the mailbag here, sad tweet. Sad tweet this week goes to Aaron Solo, who lost his big top tag team title at last night's Wrestle Circus show. He went on Twitter afterwards and was very upset, not over losing the titles, but over something that the announcers said. This is what he said. "Wrestled tonight and my notifications are flooded with no comments about the match I had, but that the commentary team referred to me as Mr. Bailey. Thank you for completely negating 9 years of my life and defining me by who I am engaged to." And he is engaged to Bailey, for those who don't know. They've been together for a very long time. You can never be sure with these things, if it's a work, maybe it's the start of some new character. I don't think it is, though. I think he really was very upset. I think he felt disrespected by that. And look, I don't think it's a good look to be going on social media and complaining about something like this, but he has a right to feel slighted. You know, he has a right to feel that way. Some of these comments, though, my God, with some of these people. Twitter is a fucking dumpster fire. Look at this. Here's just a sampling of some of these responses to him. "You only have that blue tick," because he's got the blue check mark on Twitter, "you only have that blue tick because you are Mr. Bailey. Be glad people are even talking about you because you're not even that good, kid." Yeah, so that's one comment. Here's another one. "I do get it, but to be offended by being associated with your own fiance, clearly you don't deserve her. If it's taken this long to get some recognition and it's associated with someone else, it's time to up your game, not cry, and play the blame the commentator's game about it." So, he doesn't deserve Bailey because he'd rather be called by his own name. What brand of glue are some of these people eating? Because I don't remember Elmer's being this potent. I would like to know what glue these people are chewing on lately. Here's another one. I hope this is a joke because this is actually a great opportunity for you to pivot. TJ Wilson being called Natty's husband in NXT was a great thing that they capitalized on. Now, see, that person makes a great point. I pulled that comment because that was actually a good one. I you know, TJ was great doing that act in NXT. So again, if this, whether this is a work or not, I don't know. But, you know, this could be a direction that this guy could go in. It could actually get him some good heat. So I will agree with that comment. And then here's one more for the road. This person said, and that's not a compliment. I would run over Steve Austin with a car to be Mr. Bailey. I'd probably throw Ric Flair out of an airplane to be Mr. Becky Lynch, though. So this person seems all too willing to commit homicide. I think he's just looking for an excuse. He'd probably set someone on fire for stealing his parking space. But then again, wouldn't we all? Mailbag time. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We don't have time for a lot of them. I gotta get out of here. But I do want to get to a couple. And then somebody wanted me to run down my match order for WrestleMania. And he's one of our loyal listeners. I wanted to answer it on the air. So I'm going to give most of my time to that. But let's do a couple first here. Beth from Nashville, Tennessee. I went back and rewatched the Mae Young Classic and was again amazed at the talent that I saw. I know WWE has signed some of the competitors like Bianca Belair, Candice LeRae, Kairi Sane, and Vanessa Bourne. But was there someone else in the tournament that you think WWE should have signed but did not? Yeah, and don't forget, they also signed Dakota Kai. If I had to think of like three names in no real order, Toni Storm is one. And that I don't know if that's just a case where she wasn't interested, if she's under contract somewhere else and is waiting for the contract to run out. But I thought for sure Toni Storm would be a shoo-in, and she hasn't been signed. Santana Garrett should have been signed a long time ago and hasn't been, and that's a shame because she's really good. And Jazzy Gabbert. Jazzy Gabbert got over a lot more than anybody, I think, expected to. And, you know, what happened with her is she had a deal with WWE, and then they discovered, I think she had like three herniated discs, so they rescinded the deal. She had surgery recently, and the hope is that when she is recovered, maybe, who knows, like in a year or so, she might have the chance to come back and get that deal with NXT. And I hope she does. But those would be my three. Toni Storm, Santana Garrett, and Jazzy Gabbert. Matt from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. I know this may sound trivial, but can you tell me why, when Hulk Hogan split from the NWO in 2002 and went solo, he used Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix and not Real American? Given they were so deep into Hogan's nostalgia appeal, was the decision to use that song and not Real American a Hogan call? Could they not use Real American, or was there a different reason entirely? I don't know the definitive answer. I'm going to assume, though, they were still calling him Hollywood. He was still Hollywood Hogan in those first several months after he split from the NWO, and the Jimi Hendrix theme is what they would use for Hollywood. Now, the one time they used Real American before, he came back years later and started using it, but they did use Real American on the July 4th SmackDown that year. That was the night that he and Edge won the tag team titles. He did come out to Real American. So it wasn't a case where they didn't have the rights to the music. They've always had the rights to the music. They even used it that one night. But I assume it was just he was still Hollywood. And it may well have been a Hogan call. I'm sure he liked using that song, so maybe a little bit of both. But did they have the rights to it? Yes. Nick from Naples, Florida. I recently heard that Adrian Adonis was fired from WWE shortly after WrestleMania 3 because of, quote, dress code violations. Do you know anything more about this firing? That's what I read, too, many years ago. Apparently, the Aftermags listed that as the reason back then, and there's at least some truth to it. I know with the whole, with the After magazine, some of it was, kayfabed and whatnot, but there is truth to that. There is truth that basically he was dressing like a slob when he would travel from one city to the other, and Vince McMahon, after a while, just had enough of it. Now, I'm guessing there's more to it than just dress code violations. I believe he had other issues off and on. He was not exactly a... He wasn't necessarily the easiest, or a drama-free employee, or shall I say, independent contractor. So the dress code stuff, though, was probably the final straw. his story is really sad because, you know, Adonis, by all accounts, I mean, I wasn't watching at the time when he was doing the East-West Connection stuff with Jesse Ventura, and he was slimmer, and he had the leather vest and all that, because I've heard nothing but positive things about Adonis as a worker over the years, and how, you know, he let his weight get out of control in WWE, and that may have played a role in his departure too, by the way, because he let his weight get way too out of control. So I wouldn't be surprised if that played a role also in them getting rid of him. But, you know, even when he was bigger, he was pretty agile, you know, and he would bump like a madman and he was moving around the ring. So Adonis is somebody who I don't think gets talked about a lot. And he's I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame either. So I think he would be deserving of a posthumous induction one day as well. But even just the way he died, you know, he died, it was like a year later. Him and a couple of other wrestlers, they were in a van, I think up in Canada, and there was a moose, which is funny, I just had a question from somebody from Moose Jaw, but there was a moose apparently in the middle of the road, and they swerved to avoid it, and they went off the road. I think they may have gone off a cliff, and he died. I think it was from internal injuries, and it was him and two other wrestlers died. I think the driver survived, but everybody else in the van died, and that was back in 88, so... You know, supposedly he had lost like 100 pounds and he was wrestling, I think, for the AWA at the time. And there were rumors that he was even going to go to the NWA. He might have debuted in the NWA shortly. So it's one of those what-if things. But I think Adonis is somebody who deserves to be recognized more and really doesn't get talked about a lot. And finally here, Ray from Blackpool, England. Looking at the stacked card for WrestleMania this year, what would be your ideal order of matches, starting from the kickoff show right on through the main event? Now, this is not an easy thing to do, because there's just so many damn matches, and most of them are championship matches. You know, ideally, you would break up the championship matches and not have them one right after the other, but because most of them are title matches, it's kind of hard to do that. And I've never said that making a match order like this is easy. You know, I don't envy WWE having to do this because they're in a no-win situation. You're going to have 2-3 matches on the pre-show that people are going to bitch about because, oh, it's on the pre-show. Yeah, but the reality is something has to go on the pre-show. And especially this year, you've got, I mean, I haven't counted them up. There's every bit of somewhere in that 12 to 14 match range, probably. I mean, there's a lot of matches on this card, probably too many. So let me just say that this is not an easy thing to do. Everybody's going to have their own order. This is the order that I, in sitting here going through it, I took some good time, too, to sit here. And I changed my order a few times. This is the match order for WrestleMania 34 that I settled on. And I know there are going to be people who are upset with me with this order, but this, I think, would be the best order and the order that would make sense for WrestleMania this year. I would kick off with the Andre the Giant Battle Royal on the pre-show. And I would follow that up with the triple threat match for the United States Championship with Randy Orton, Bobby Roode, and Jinder Mahal. Because you need to break up these title matches. Last year, the Intercontinental title with Dean Ambrose and Baron Corbin, that ended up on the kickoff show. Along with the Cruiserweight title. This year, it should be the U.S. title. Because it is the weakest, by far the weakest, of all of the title programs, at least as far as the singles titles go, to me, it is the weakest of all the programs right now. And if one match has to end up on the kickoff show of the bunch, that's the one that should. Now, I think they may need a third kickoff match, honestly, because there's just so many. But let's operate under the assumption that they can get away with just doing two. We get to the main card. I would open the main card, because a lot is made about what's going to be the opening match. There have been some classic opening matches at WrestleMania over the years. You always want to open with a bang. Well, I think the best way to do that is to open the actual card, the formal card, with the Cruiserweight title tournament final with Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali. You want people to take notice of this new and improved 205 Live? You want people to take these guys seriously and know what they're all about? Don't relegate them to pre-show duty. Let them open the show and tear the house down. And believe me, those two guys will do just that. They are two of the very best in the entire company, especially Mustafa Ali. I'm a big fan of his. And I think allowing those two to open the show, you're going to crown a new champion. I think that's the way to go. I would follow that up with the SmackDown Tag Team title match, which is not official yet, but I assume there will be one. I assume it ends up being the Usos, the New Day, the Bludgeon Brothers, and maybe they can shoehorn Benjamin and Gable in there and make it a fatal four-way. That would be the first time that the Usos, after a decade of service in this company, would have a match on the main WrestleMania card, which is unbelievable to me. I mentioned that stat a few weeks ago, and I still can't believe it, but it's true. And to me, they deserve that moment. That is the only thing keeping me from putting this on the kickoff show. When I was thinking of what could a third match be, if there had to be a third match on the kickoff show, I kept coming back to the SmackDown title match, the tag team title match. But I can't do that because the Usos deserve to be on the main card, so I would put them here. I would follow that with Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax for the Raw Women's title. And as I was mentioning earlier, I would have Alexa win. I don't think Nia needs to win the belt here. I think you can hold off on that another month. But I would put the Raw Women's title match there. I would follow that with the triple threat for the Intercontinental title with Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, and The Miz. Then I would do the Raw Tag Team title match next with Braun and whoever his partner is beating The Bar. I would then have Charlotte and Asuka for the SmackDown Women's Championship. So you've got, you know, a pretty heavy top of the card in terms of the two, you know, big title matches and two big tag team matches and Cena Undertaker, which is probably, you know, not official yet, but we all know it will be. And then Charlotte and Asuka is a huge match too. You can't, I don't think you could just do one after the other at the very end of the show. You got to break them up. And so when you look at the lay of the land here with the top matches, I think Charlotte and Asuka goes here, closer to the middle of the show. In fact, after that, I would put the first of the two big tag team matches, which is Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Now, right now it's Owens against Zayn, but I think we all know where this is headed, which is a tag team match. And so I would do Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon here. Now, you know, good luck to the people who have to follow this match. I know this is, you know, this being Bryan's first match in 3 years, it's going to be a big deal. But I can, in good conscience, have Shane McMahon in the WrestleMania main event. Shane McMahon should not be headlining WrestleMania. And honestly, no tag team match with nothing at stake should be in the main event of WrestleMania anyway. So for those people who would say, well, how can you not put Bryan in the WrestleMania main event? Well, the circumstances dictate that I don't think it's a good idea. So I would put that match here. Now, here's where things get interesting. The next match would be the Universal title match, Brock Lesnar defending against Roman Reigns. And I know there's going to be people saying, well, how can you not put that in the main event? That's the match that has the most build-up right now, and they're going to anoint Reigns. This is going to be his big coronation. They're going to want the big pyro celebration at the end, and Brock's their biggest star, and it could be his last match. There are reasons to put this in the main event of WrestleMania, and I do think it will end up being the WrestleMania main event. I have no doubt that WWE is probably going to want to put this in the main event slot, and there's a very good chance that that's what ends up happening. I also think that it is the match that has the most predictable outcome, and I also think you do run the risk. If this is Brock's last match, or people think it might be his last match, and if the people who come to this show, and you know the kind of crowd that comes to WrestleMania and the night after WrestleMania and the NXT show and all these shows over the weekend, these are the fans that I think they have to be most worried about when it comes to someone like Reigns getting the reaction that they are looking for him to get. And so I think for that reason that it's a risk in terms of the crowd, but also just in terms of the fact that it is a predictable finish on a card where you have other big matches that are not as predictable. Predictability is not always a bad thing. If you have one big match with a predictable winner and it's going to be your big moment and you want to end the show with it, then go for it. There's not necessarily a problem with that. But in this case, I do have a problem with it because it is such, to me, a foregone conclusion here and not an outcome that a lot of people are going to want to see. I'd rather not have WrestleMania end on such a sour note and a predictable one. So I'm bumping this match up earlier in the card. I would have it here. And you could have Reigns win and have his big moment, but it doesn't have to be at the end of the show. Now, what I would follow the Universal title match with, and I thought about breaking these two up, but I would stagger them, I would put them one on top of the other here. It's two separate brands, two separate titles. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I would follow the Universal title match with the WWE championship match. AJ Styles against Shinsuke Nakamura, another match that could easily go on last, and I thought about doing it that way, and I said to myself, you know, I worry about that. I don't worry as much about... There are other matches on this card I wouldn't necessarily worry about as far as the crowd being completely dead at the end of this marathon, but this is going to be a marathon show, and there are certain matches I think that you want to avoid putting in the main event slot because people might be burned out by the time you get to it, and this is one of them. And I can't even say the build-up for this match has been, you know, as great as any other match on the show. The build-up really has been kind of ho-hum to me, but it's a match... I mean, it's easily one of the matches I'm most looking forward to. I would love to see them go on last. I think Nakamura will get this great, violin entrance probably, and maybe they'll do something special for AJ as well. And it's going to be this big, epic match. I'm sure it'll be a classic, and I look forward to it. But I would put that match on here. I would not put them on last. I think they'll probably be better off for it in terms of the crowd by putting it on a little bit earlier. But I would do Universal first, WWE title match right after it. I would follow the WWE Championship match with the mixed tag Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey against Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. So that way you put a little bit of distance between the two big tag matches, the Brian Shane one and the Rousey Kurt Angle one. I'd put that on here. You'll notice I have not mentioned the Women's Battle Royal. The Fuck the Fabulous Moolah Battle Royal. I have not mentioned that yet. Reason being, I would put that on second to last as something of a buffer. And it's not, oh, you know, the women once again getting the buffer slot. It's just the match that happens to fall into that, you know, category here. And it's a battle royal. So it's going to have some time to it. And they've got the story they're telling, whatever it is, with Sasha Banks and Bayley. Maybe it'll come down to them. We'll see. But it does act as something of a de facto buffer here. Because I do think you want something... That's a little bit of a come me down, but also is not one of the big, like, five matches they have on this card, one right after the other. So, between Rousey and Kurt against Triple H and Stephanie and the main event, I would put the Women's Battle Royal. And then there's the main event. What match have I not mentioned yet? The match that hasn't officially been announced yet, but we all know that it will be. John Cena, one-on-one, against The Undertaker. Now, a lot of you know my thoughts about this. This is not a match that I really wanted to see. It's not a match that I think has to happen because, frankly, this is a match that should have happened a good 2 or 3 years ago. When the Undertaker streak was still a thing, that was the time to do the John Cena match. The biggest match they could have done, some might say Sting, but the biggest match they could have done while the Undertaker streak was still intact was John Cena against the Undertaker. Because at that time, more so than now, John Cena was the untouchable John Cena. And The Undertaker, I mean, you held your breath every time there was a near fall in any one of his WrestleMania matches. He's the one guy, even more than Sting. Because had Sting come into the company earlier, there's no real drama to me in the finish of that match. There's no way Sting is coming in finally to WWE only to get a win over The Undertaker and break The Undertaker's streak. Vince McMahon is going to take a WCW and TNA guy and bring him in, you know, old as he is, and have him be the one to break the streak and beat The Undertaker. Are you on acid? So, the match itself would have been cool to see, but to me, there's no real drama in the finish. With Cena, though, there was a time where there would have been legitimate drama. And he would have hit an AA or something, or maybe the third AA, and everybody would have been, their hearts would have jumped up into their throat, and it would have been great. You talk about hanging on to every near fall. It would have been fantastic, but in the end, Undertaker would pull out the win. They didn't do it. They wanted to do the match at WrestleMania 32 in Dallas. By then, the streak was already over. Even then, it would have been too late. So, let me just make that very clear from the beginning here. This is not a match that I had any real interest in seeing. But it is still a big match. Here's the reason I would put this on as the WrestleMania main event. If it is a one-on-one regular singles match, I would not put this on as the main event of WrestleMania. I'd have to recalibrate my lineup here. I am doing it with the assumption, with the prediction, with the hope that they will add a stipulation to this match that makes it a career versus career match. The one way for you to add real drama in the absence of the streak to a match like this, which is a big match on its own, but you want real drama, you put both careers on the line. You've got two guys here. One guy we already thought was retired. Now he's coming back. John Cena, he's got one foot out the door. He's part-time at best. He's making movies. We know this. Now, to me, I still don't know how realistic it is for people to think that this would be John Cena's last match. But I do think it needs that stipulation. I think that stipulation would work. I don't think you could just do Cena Undertaker with no stip. I think you got to have something on the line. You got to make the match more important beyond, hey, it's two of our biggest stars. And I think a career versus career stipulation that does not fuck with the fans, that does not leave any ambiguity whatsoever about the outcome of this match. There's no more wondering from year to year, because I'm tired of all the bullshit and all the rumors and all the... And I look, I'm as guilty of it as anybody. Every year it's the same thing. Undertaker's last match. Is it Undertaker's last match? That was Undertaker's last match. And then he comes back. I'm sick of it. This needs to end. And if it is the end of The Undertaker, everybody needs to be made very aware of the fact that this is it. If he loses, he's done. And he can get the proper send-off, which he got last year. But now they're bringing him back. But he should get a send-off the way that Shawn Michaels got one at WrestleMania 26. He lost a career-ending match. People knew that was the end. They gave him a standing ovation. And he walked to the back. And you know what? He's one of the few guys that hasn't come back. He stood by that stipulation. He has not wrestled a single match since 2010. I admire him for that. I really do. He stuck to his guns. Good for him. And they should do the same here for whoever loses this match. Of course, it would be The Undertaker, which means Undertaker would have to lose. So I don't know how hot people are going to be about that. That, you know, Undertaker would lose again and would lose to John Cena, but by adding the stipulation, it would necessitate that he lose. And if he looks as bad as he did in that match with Roman Reigns last year, then I don't know that he should be going out as a winner. And I thought about this hard too, because, you know, that match with Roman was no good. And that was the main event last year. That was the final match. And I thought, do we really want to run that risk again? Now he's a year older. What if he goes out there and he has another bad match? I mean, that's no way you want to end your WrestleMania show. Yeah, it's a risk. He might go out there and not look good at all. Or he might turn back the hands of time for one night and have the best match that he's had in 3 years. I remember he looked like shit at WrestleMania 30. Now, he was concussed, so I'm sure that had a lot to do with it, but that match was awful. But then he came back the next year, had a pretty good match with Bray Wyatt. He looked like he was as youthful as he had been in years. You never know. But there's got to be something on the line in this match. I think a career stipulation is what makes sense. And that has to be the definitive end for The Undertaker. There is no bigger opponent left for him to face. If you're going to do this match, Cena is as big as it gets. There is no reason for him to wrestle anyone else after this point. So if we can all agree that this would then be the end, for real this time, of The Undertaker, that to me is an ending worthy of the finish of WrestleMania. Maybe he and Cena embrace, Cena takes his leave, he leaves Undertaker in the ring alone, and he can get the send-off that, again, it's so weird because he got the send-off last year, but again, they're going back on it, and so look, it is what it is. But The Undertaker is a big enough name that he does deserve, I think, that one last real send-off. And we deserve to know that it is his send-off and not get jerked around by being told, oh, he retired, or Undertaker may have retired. Remember, they were being very ambiguous about it on commentary. Now we know why. Because even they knew. Chances are this guy's coming back. They need to put the final exclamation point on it. And to me, that's the one way you build real drama in this match. The one drawback, though, for those of you that don't like Cena winning, is that Cena would have to win. Otherwise, Cena's career is over, and I don't think anybody buys into the fact that Cena is retiring. So, there you go. Those are my thoughts on what the match lineup should be for WrestleMania 34. In the grand scheme of things, does it really matter that much? No, it doesn't matter that much, but people like talking about, you know, the order. And they do, some people really, I mean, they get very upset if matches aren't slotted in a certain order or if a certain match goes on last. So I know there's going to be a lot of animated discussion about it. Certainly if this makes Trax's channel in the comments section, I'd like to know what you guys think. If you disagree, if you would only change one or two things, if you would leave it the way it is. Everybody's going to have their own match order. Everybody's going to have their own opinion of what should go on last. Just remember, it's a long show. So if there's two of your favorites, okay, that you want them to go on last, yeah, ideally, maybe they, you know, they should, but are you really doing them any favors by putting them on at the ass end of a 7-hour show? Just keep that in mind. Cena Undertaker, I'm less worried that the crowd would just be comatose for it. Because if they go into it knowing that one of these guys is wrestling their last match, I mean, to me, that's something to get excited over. You got questions, you know where to hit me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Don't hit too hard. You can follow me on Twitter, @solemonster is my handle. Don't forget New Japan, Strong Style Evolved. Tonight on Access Television. Also hitting New Japan World. For those of you airing live, I should say, on New Japan World, if you are outside the U.S. If you are in the U.S. and you don't have access, you can probably watch it when it ends up on New Japan World, probably the next day. So you may not be able to watch it live, but you can still check out the show if you want to see it. Some good matches on there. We will be back with episode 541. We are getting very close to New Orleans, and I hope to see many of you there. That's only, what, 2 weeks away now, I think, right? Yeah, it's coming up pretty quick. So episode 541 is next week. I will see you guys then. In the meantime, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. I'm out of here. I got places to be, but you guys have yourselves a great week, and we'll see you back here again next time. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off.
They have Kane in the back. This is what he said. Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster, but it is I who will climb out alone and with a smile across my face.
Oh, oh my God.
What do they think this is, Shakespeare?
I was driving yesterday, and some asshole double parks his car in the service lane.
I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's smelly orifice? I wish 1,000 deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope and we could fade to commercial.
Since 2007, The Solemonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemonster Sound Off.